Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents the Night Angel Trilogy, The Way of Shadows, Part 1. Created by Brent Weeks. Narrated by Dylan Lynch. With performances by David Coyne, Eric Messner, Ren Casey, Tony Penny, Tim Getman, Terrence Azelford, Michael Glenn, Joe Brack, Christopher Graybill, Elizabeth Jernigan, Ken Jackson, James Lewis, Johan Detweiler, Rick Rowan, Colleen Delaney, Sonny Lasky, Casey Platt, James Konacek, and Andy Clements. The Way of Shadows, Part 1.
Azoth squatted in the alley, cold mud squishing through his bare toes. He stared at the narrow space beneath the wall, trying to get his nerve up. The sun wouldn't come up for hours, and the tavern was empty. Most taverns in the city had dirt floors, but this part of the Warrens had been built over marshland, and not even drunks wanted to drink standing ankle-deep in mud. So the tavern had been raised a few inches on stilts and floored with stout bamboo poles. Coyne sometimes dropped through the gaps in the bamboo, and the crawl space was too small for most people to go after them. The guild's bigs were too big, and the littles were too scared to squeeze into the suffocating darkness shared with spiders and cockroaches and rats and the wicked, half-wild tomcat the owner kept. Worst was the pressure of the bamboo against your back, flattening you every time a patron walked overhead. It had been Azoth's favorite spot for a year, but he wasn't as small as he used to be. Last time he got stuck and spent hours panicking until it rained and the ground softened beneath him enough that he could dig himself out. It was muddy now, and there would be no patrons, and Azoth had seen the tomcat leave. It should be fine. Besides, Rat was collecting guild dues tomorrow, and Azoth didn't have 4 coppers. He didn't even have 1, so there wasn't much choice. Rat wasn't understanding, and he didn't know his own strength. Littles had died from his beatings. Pushing aside mounds of mud, Azoth lay on his stomach. The dank earth soaked his thin, filthy tunic instantly. He'd have to work fast. He was skinny, and if he caught a chill, the odds of getting better weren't good. Scooting through the darkness, he began searching for the telltale metallic gleam. A couple of lamps were still burning in the tavern, so light filtered through the gaps, illuminating the mud and standing water in strange rectangles. Heavy marsh mist climbed the shafts of light, only to fall over and over again. Spider webs draped across Azoth's face and broke, and he felt a tingle on the back of his neck. No, it was his imagination. Something glimmered, and he grabbed his first copper. He slithered to the unfinished pine beam he had gotten stuck under last time and shoveled mud away until water filled the depression. The gap was still so narrow that he had to turn his head sideways to squeeze underneath it. Azoth pushed his face into the sliming water. He began the slow crawl. His head and shoulders made it through, but then a stub of a branch caught the back of his tunic. Azoth almost cried out and was instantly glad he hadn't. Through a wide space between bamboo poles, Azoth saw a man seated at the bar, still drinking. In the Warrens, you had to judge people quickly. Even if you had quick hands like Azoth did, when you stole every day, you were bound to get caught eventually. All merchants hit the guild rats who stole from them. If they wanted to have any goods left to sell, they had to. The trick was picking the ones who'd smack you, so they didn't try their boot next time. There were others who'd beat you so badly you never had a next time. Azoth thought he saw something kind and sad and lonely in this lanky figure. He was perhaps 30, with a scraggly blonde beard and a huge sword on his hip.
How could you abandon me?
The man held a flagon in his left hand and cradled something Azoth couldn't see in his right.
After all the years I served you, how could you abandon me now? Is it because of Vonda?
There was an itch on Azoth's calf. He ignored it. It was just his imagination again. He reached behind his back to free his tunic. He needed to find his coins and get out of here. Something heavy dropped down to the floor above Azoth.
Why dares thou blint? You never fail to surprise.
Nothing was visible of the man above Azoth through the gaps except a drawn dagger. He must have dropped from the rafters.
Hey, I'm all for calling a bluff, but you should have seen Vonda when she figured out you weren't going to save her. Made me damn near bawl my eyes out.
I killed 6 men tonight. Are you sure you want to make it 7?
Azoth slowly caught up with what they'd been saying. The lanky man was the wet boy Durzo Blint. A wet boy was like an assassin, in the way a tiger is like a kitten. Among wet boys, Durzo Blint was indisputably the best. The itch on Azoth's calf itched again. It wasn't his imagination. There was something crawling up the inside of his trousers. It felt big, but not as big as a cockroach. Azoth's fear identified the weight. A white wolf spider. Its poison liquefied flesh in a slowly spreading circle. If it bit, even with a healer, the best an adult could hope for was to lose a limb. A guild rat wouldn't be so lucky.
Blint, you'll be lucky if you don't cut your own head off after what you've been drinking. Just in the time I've been watching, you've had
8 flagons. And I had 4 before that.
Azoth didn't move. If he jerked his legs together to kill the spider, the water would splash and the men would know he was there. Even if Durzo Blint had looked kind, that was an awful big sword. And Azoth knew better than to trust grown-ups.
You're bluffing.
I don't bluff. Why don't you invite your friends in?
The spider crawled up to Azoth's inner thigh. Trembling, he pulled his tunic up and back and stretched the waist of his trousers, making a gap and praying the spider would crawl for it. Above him, the assassin reached 2 fingers up to his lips. Azoth didn't see Durzo move, but a moment later, the assassin's body tumbled to the floor. Suddenly, the front and back doors burst open. Concentrating on not jostling the spider, Azoth didn't move, even when another dropping body pushed his face briefly underwater. A spider crawled across Azoth's butt and then onto his thumb. Slowly, Azoth drew his hand around so he could see it. His fears were right. It was a white wolf spider, its legs as long as Azoth's thumb. He flung it away convulsively and rubbed his fingers, making sure he hadn't been bitten. He reached for the splintered branch holding his tunic and broke it off. Azoth couldn't see anyone through the gaps. A few feet away, something was dripping from the boards into a puddle. It was too dark to see what it was, but it didn't take much imagination to guess. The entire fight had lasted maybe 20 seconds, and Azoth was sure no one had left the tavern. Had they all killed each other? He was chilled, and not just from the water. Death was no stranger in the Warrens, but Azoth had never seen so many people die so fast and so easily. In a few minutes, Azoth had gathered 6 coppers. If he were braver, he would have looted the bodies in the tavern, but Azoth couldn't believe Durzo Blint was dead. Maybe he was a demon, like the other guild rats said. Maybe he was standing outside, waiting to kill Azoth for spying on him. Chest tight with fear, Azoth turned and scooted toward his hole. 6 coppers was good. Dues were only 4, so he could buy bread tomorrow to share with Jarl and Doll Girl. He was a foot from the opening. Suddenly, something bright flashed in front of his nose. It was so close. It took a moment to come into focus. It was Durzo Blint's huge sword, and it was stuck through the floor all the way into the mud, barring Azoth's escape.
Never speak of this. Understand? I've done worse than killed children.
The sword disappeared, and Azoth scrambled out into the night. He didn't stop running for miles.
Four coppers! 4! This isn't 4.
Rat's face was so rage-red, his pimples only showed as a scattering of white dots. He grabbed Jarl's threadbare tunic and lifted him off the ground. Azoth ducked his head. He couldn't walk. Azoth realized it was a performance, not the beating. Rat was definitely hitting Jarl, but he was hitting him with an open hand. It was louder that way. Rat wasn't even paying attention to Jarl. He was watching the rest of the guild, enjoying their fear.
Who's next?
Azoth stepped forward quickly so Rat wouldn't kick his friend. At 16, Rat was already as big as a man, and he had fat, which made him unique among the slaveborn. Azoth held out his four coppers.
8 puke.
Hey,
you gotta pay for Doll Girl, too.
Azoth looked around for help. Some of the big shifted and looked at each other, but no one said a word.
She's too young. Littles don't pay dues till they're 8.
Attention shifted to Doll Girl, who was sitting in the dirty alley. She noticed the looks and withered, shrinking into herself. Doll Girl was tiny, with huge eyes, but beneath the grime, her features were as fine and perfect as her namesakes.
I say she's 8 unless she says different. Say it, Doll Girl. Say it, or I'll beat up your boyfriend.
Doll Girl's eyes got bigger. Azoth didn't protest, didn't point out that Doll Girl was mute. Rat knew. Everyone knew. But Rat was the fist. He only answered to Jalaliel, and Jalaliel wasn't here. Rat pulled Azoth close.
Why don't you join my pretty boys, Azo? You'll never pay dues again.
No.
Some were laughing because they enjoyed Azoth's humiliation. Some just hoping to put Rat in a good mood before their turn came. Black hatred stabbed through him. Azoth hated Rat, hated the guild, hated himself. Rat caught Azoth's eye and smirked. Rat was big, but he wasn't stupid. He knew how far he was pushing Azoth. He knew Azoth would crumple, afraid, just like everyone else.
Go bugger yourself, Ratty Fatty!
It was a golden moment of victory. Azoth thought he could hear jaws dropping. Azoth blinked up at Rat, whose black hair glowed like a halo as it blocked the moon's sun, and knew he was going to die.
Rat! Rat, I need you!
Azoth rolled over and saw Jalaliel emerging from the guild's building. His pale skin was beaded with sweat, though the day wasn't hot.
Rat! I said now!
Rat wiped his face, and seeing his rage cool so suddenly was almost more frightening than seeing its sudden heat. His face cleared, and he smiled at Azoth. Just smiled.
Hey, OJO!
Hey, ho, Azoth!
Jarl came to join Azoth and Doll Girl.
You know, you are about as smart as a box of hair. They'll be calling him Ratty Fatty behind his back for years.
He wanted me to be one of his girls.
They were propped against a wall several blocks away, sharing the stale loaf Azoth had bought. The smells of baking, though less intense this late in the day, covered at least some of the smells of sewage, rotting garbage piled on the banks of the river, and the rancid bite of the urine and brains of the tanneries. If current architecture was all bamboo and rice fiber walls and screens, Sonarian architecture was rougher, heavier, lacking the studied simplicity of Karen design. If Alataran architecture was all granite and pine,
Sonarian architecture was less formidable,
lacking the deliberate durability of Alataran structures. If Osaini architecture was airy spires and soaring arches,
Sonarian architecture only soared above one story in a few nobles' manses on the east side. Sonarian buildings were everything squat and dark and cheap and low, especially in the warrens.
A material that cost twice as much was never used, even if it lasted 4 times as long.
Sonarians didn't think long-term because they didn't live long-term.
Their buildings frequently incorporated bamboo and rice fiber, both of which grew nearby, and pine and granite, which were not too far away.
But there was no Sonarian style.
The country had been conquered too many times over the centuries to pride itself on anything but survival. In the Warrens, there wasn't even pride. Azoth absently ripped the loaf into thirds, then scowled. He'd made two about the same size, and one third smaller. He put one of the bigger pieces on his leg and handed the other big piece to Doll Girl, who followed him like a shadow. He was about to hand the small piece to Jarl when Doll Girl's face puckered in disapproval. Azoth took the small piece for himself. Jarl didn't even notice.
Better one of his girls than dead.
I won't end up like Bim.
Aso, once Jalaliel buys review, Rath will be our guild head. You're 11. 5 years till you get review. You'll never make it. Rath will make Bim look lucky compared to you.
So what do I do, Jarl?
Ordinarily, this was Azoth's favorite time. He was with the two people he didn't have to be afraid of, and he was silencing the insistent voice of hunger. Now the bread tasted like dust. He stared into the market. Jarl smiled, his teeth brilliant against his black Ladeshian skin.
If I tell you a secret, can you keep it quiet?
Azoth looked from side to side and leaned in.
Well, I can. I'm not so sure about Doll Girl.
They both turned toward where she sat, gnawing on the heel of the loaf. There was a combination of the crumb stuck to her face and her scowl of outrage. Azoth rubbed her blonde head and, when she kept scowling, pulled her close. She fought against him, but when he let his arm drop, she didn't scoot away. She looked at Jarl expectantly. Jarl lifted his tunic and removed a rag he had tied around his body as a sash.
I won't be like the others, Azoth. I'm not just going to let life happen to me. I'm gonna get out.
Jarl opened the sash. Tucked within its folds were a dozen coppers, 4 silvers, and impossibly, 2 gold gunders.
4 years. 4 years I've been saving.
Jarl dropped 2 more coppers into the sash.
You mean all the times Rat slapped you around for not making you dues? You've had this?
Jarl smiled, and slowly Azoth understood. The beatings were a small price to pay for hope. After a while, most guild rats withered and let life beat them. They became animals, or they went crazy like Azoth had today and got themselves killed. Looking at that treasure, part of Azoth wanted to strike Jarl, grab the sash and run. With that money, he could get out, get clothes to replace his rags, and pay apprentice fees somewhere, anywhere. Maybe. Maybe even with Durzo Blint, as he told Jarl and Doll Girl so many times. Then he saw Doll Girl. He knew how she'd look at him if he stole that sash full of life.
If any of us make it out of the Warrens, it'll be you, Jarl. You deserve it. You have a plan?
Always. I want you to take it, Azoth. As soon as we find out where Durzo Blint lives, we're going to get you out. All right?
Azoth looked at the pile of coins. 4 years. Dozens of beatings. Not only did he not know if he would give that much for Jarl, but he'd also thought of stealing it from him. He couldn't hold back hot tears. He was so ashamed. He was so afraid. Afraid of Rat, afraid of Durzo Blint. Always afraid. But if he got out, he could help Jarl, and Blint would teach him to kill. Azoth looked up at Jarl, not caring to look at Doll Girl for fear of what might be in her big brown eyes.
I'll take it.
He knew who he'd kill first. Durzo Blint pulled himself on top of the small estate's wall and watched the guard pass.
The perfect guard. A bit slow, lacking imagination, and dutiful.
The guard took his 39 steps, stopped at the corner, planted his halberd, scratched his stomach under his gambeson, checked in all directions, then walked on.
35, 36.
Durzo slipped out of the man's shadow and eased himself over the edge of the walkway. He held on by his fingertips.
Now.
Durzo dropped and hit the grass just as the guard thumped the butt of his halberd on the wood walkway. He doubted the guard would have heard him anyway, but paranoia begat perfection in the wet boy's trade. The yard was small, and the house was not much bigger.
It was built on the Karen design with translucent rice paper walls.
Bald cypress and white cedar formed the doors and arches, and cheaper local pine had been used for the frame and the floors.
It was Spartan like all Karen houses, and that fit General Aegon's military background and his ascetic personality.
More than that, it fit his budget. Despite the general's many successes, King David had not rewarded him well, which was part of why the wet boy had come. Durzo found an unlocked window on the second floor.
The general's wife was asleep in the bed. They weren't so Karen as to sleep on woven mats.
They were, however, poor enough that the mattress was stuffed with straw rather than feathers. The general's wife was a plain woman, sprawled more in the middle than to one side of the bed. The covers on the side she was facing had been disturbed. The wet boy slid into the room, using his talent to soften the sound of his footsteps on the hardwood floor. Curious. A quick glance confirmed that the general hadn't just come for a nocturnal conjugal visit. They actually shared the room. Perhaps he was even poorer than people thought. Durzo's brow furrowed under his mask. It was a detail he didn't need to know. He drew the short poisonous knife and walked toward the bed. She'd never feel a thing. He stopped. The woman was turned toward the disturbed covers. She'd been sleeping close to her husband before he got up. Not on the far side of the bed, the way a woman merely doing her marital duties would. It was a love match. After her murder, Elaine Gunder had planned to offer the general a quick remarriage to a rich noblewoman. But this general, who'd married a low-born woman for love, would react quite differently to his wife's murder than a man who'd married for ambition. The idiot. The prince was so consumed with ambition that he thought everyone else was, too. The wet boy sheathed the knife and stepped into the hall. He still had to know where the general stood. Immediately.
Damn it, man. King Davin's dying. I'd be surprised if he's got a week left.
Whoever had spoken was mostly right. The wet boy had given the king his final dose of poison tonight. By dawn, he would be dead, leaving a throne in contention between one man who was strong and just and another who was weak and corrupt. The underworld Tsukage was not disinterested in the outcome. The voice had come from the receiving room downstairs. The wet boy hurried to the end of the hall. The house was so small that the receiving room doubled as the study. He had a perfect view of the two men. General Brandt Aegon had a graying beard, close-trimmed hair that he didn't comb, and a jerky way of moving, keeping his eyes on everything. He was thin and sinewy, his legs slightly bowed from a life in the saddle. The man across from him was Duke Regnus Geyer. He was a huge man, both tall and wide, and little of his bulk was fat. He folded ringed fingers on his belly.
By the night angels, I could kill them both and end the Nine's worries right now.
Are we deceiving ourselves, Brandt?
My lord.
No, Brandt. I need your opinion as a friend, not as a vassal.
Durzo crept closer. He drew the throwing knives slowly, careful with the poisoned edges.
If we do nothing, Elaine Gunder will become king. He is a weak, foul, and faithless man. The Tsukage already owns the warrens. The king's patrols won't even leave the main roads, and you know all the reasons that's only bound to get worse. The death games entrenched the Tsukage. Elaine doesn't have the will or the inclination to oppose the Tsukage now, while we can still root them out. So are we deceiving ourselves in thinking that you'd be a better king? Not at all. And the throne is yours by rights.
Blint almost smiled. The underworld's lords, the Tsukage Nine, agreed with every word, which was why Blint was making sure Regnus Geyer didn't become king.
And tactically, we could do it
with minimal bloodshed. Duke Wesseros is out of the country. My own regiment is in the city. The men believe in you, my lord. We need a strong king, a good king. We need you, Regnus.
And Elaine's family. They'll be part of the minimal bloodshed.
You want the truth? Yes. Even if we don't order it, one of our men will kill them to protect you. Even if it meant hanging. They believe in you that much.
So, the question is, Does the good of many in the future outweigh the murder of a few now?
How long has it been since I had such qualms?
Durzo barely stifled an overpowering urge to throw the daggers. The suddenness of his rage shook him. What was that about? It was Regnus. The man reminded him of another king he'd once served, a king worthy of it.
That's for you to answer, my lord. But, if I may, is the question really so philosophical?
What do you mean?
You still love Nalia, don't you?
Nalia was Elaine Gunder's wife. Regnus looked stricken.
I was betrothed to her for 10 years, Brandt. We were each other's first lovers.
My lord, I'm sorry. It's not my place.
No, Brandt. I never speak of it. As I decide whether to be a man or a king, let me. It's been 15 years since Nalia's father broke our betrothal and married her to that dog Elaine. I should be over it. I am. Except when I have to see her with her children and have to imagine her sharing a bed with Elaine Gunder. The only joy my marriage has given me is my son Logan, and I can scarce believe her own has been better.
My lord, given the involuntary nature of both of your weddings, could you not divorce Katrina and marry...
No, no. If the queen's children live, they will always be a threat to my son, whether I exile them or adopt them. Nalia's eldest boy is 14, too old to forget that he was destined for a throne.
The right is on your side, my lord, and who knows but that answers unforeseen may arise to these problems once you sit on the throne.
Regnus nodded unhappily, obviously knowing he held hundreds or thousands of lives in his hands, not knowing he held his own as well.
If he plots rebellion, I'll kill him now, I swear by the Night Angels. I serve only the Sakage now, and myself, always myself.
May generations unborn forgive me, but I will not commit murder for what may be, Brandt. I cannot. I will swear fealty.
The wet boy slid the daggers back into their sheaths, ignoring the twin feelings of relief and despair he felt.
Oh, it's that damned woman. She's ruined me. She's ruined everything.
Blint saw the ambush from 50 paces away and walked right into its teeth. The sun was still an hour from rising, and the only people on the twisting streets of the Warrens were merchants who'd fallen asleep where they shouldn't have and were hurrying home to their wives. The guild, Black Dragon from the guild glyphs he'd passed, was hiding around a narrow choke point in the alley where guild rats could spring up to clog both ends of the street and also attack from the low rooftops. He had affected a bad right knee and pulled his cloak tight around his shoulders, the hood pulled low over his face. As he limped into the trap, one of the older children, a big as they called them, jumped into the alley ahead of him, brandishing a rusty saber. Guild rats surrounded the wet boy.
Oh, clever. You keep a lookout before dawn when most of the other guilds are sleeping, and you're able to jump a few bags who've been out all night whoring. They don't want to explain any bruises from fighting to their wives, so they hand over their coins. Not bad. Whose idea was that?
Azoth's.
The big pointed past the wet boy.
Shut up!
The wet boy looked at the small boy on the rooftop. He was holding a rock aloft, his pale blue eyes intent, ready. He looked familiar.
Oh, now you've given him away.
You shut up, too! Hand over your purse, or we'll kill you.
Talelia, he called them bags. A merchant wouldn't know we call them that. He's Sakage.
Shut up, Jarl! We need this. Just give us
I don't have time for this. Move!
Hand it!
The wet boy darted forward, his left hand twisting Jalaliel's sword hand, snatching the saber as his body spun in. His right elbow cracked against the guild head's temple, but he pulled the blow so it wouldn't kill.
I said I don't have time for this.
Durzo threw back his hood. He knew he was nothing special to look at. He was lanky and sharp-featured, with dark blonde hair and a wispy blonde beard over lightly pockmarked cheeks. But he might have had three heads from the way the children shrank back. The children dropped the rocks they had been holding. Durzo saw fear and awe in their eyes. They'd just tried to mug a legend. He smirked.
Sharpen this. Only an amateur lets his blade rust.
Then Durzo walked through the mob. They scattered as if it might kill them all. Azoth watched him stride into the early morning mists, disappearing like so many other hopes into the sinkhole of the Warrens. Durzo Blint was everything Azoth wasn't. He was powerful, dangerous, confident, fearless. He was like a god. He'd looked at the whole guild arrayed against him, even the bigs like Roth and Jalaliel and Rat, and he'd been amused. Amused! Someday, Azoth swore. He didn't quite dare even think the whole thought, lest Blint sense his presumption, but his whole body yearned for it. Someday. When Blint was far enough away not to notice, Azoth followed. The bashers guarding the 9 subterranean chamber eyed Durzo sourly. There were twins and two of the biggest men in the Sakage. Each had a lightning bolt tattooed down his forehead.
Weapons?
Lefty.
Durzo removed his sword, 3 daggers, the dart strapped to his wrist, and a number of small glass balls from his other arm.
I'm Lefty.
Lefty was patting down Blint vigorously.
You mind? We both know if I wanted to kill anyone in there, I could. With or without weapons.
So why don't I just ram this pretty sword?
What Lefty means is, why don't you pretend not to be a threat, and we'll pretend we're the reason. It's just a formality, Blint. Like asking someone how they are when you don't care.
I don't ask.
I was sorry to hear about Vonda.
Durzo stopped cold, a lance twisting through his guts.
Really?
The big man held the door open and glanced at his brother. Part of Durzo knew he should say something cutting or threatening or funny, but his tongue was leaden.
Master Blint?
Recovering, Durzo stepped into the 9's meeting room without raising his eyes. It was a place to inspire fear. Carved from black fire glass, a platform dominated the room. 9 chairs sat on the platform. A 10th chair sat above them like a throne. There was only bare floor facing the chairs. Those the 9 interviewed would stand. The chamber was a tight rectangle, but it was deep. The ceiling was so high it disappeared in the darkness. It gave those questioned the feeling of being interrogated in hell. That the chairs, walls, and even the floor were carved with tiny gargoyles, dragons, and people, all screaming, did nothing to cool the effect. But Durzo walked in with an easy familiarity. The night held no terrors for him. The shadows welcomed his eyes, hid nothing from him.
At least that much is left me.
The 9 had their cowls on, except for Mama Kay, though most knew there was no hiding their identities from Durzo. Above them, the Shinga, Pon Draden, sat in his throne. He was as still and silent as usual.
If the wife dead...
Corbin Fischel was a fashionable, handsome man with a reputation for cruelty, especially toward those children in the guilds he managed. The laughter his lisp might have provoked somehow dried up under the ever-present malice on his face.
Things aren't as you expected.
Durzo gave his report briefly. The king would soon die, and the men whom the Sakage had feared would try to succeed him would not press their claim. That left the throne to Elaine Gunder, who was too weak to dare interfere with the Sakage.
I would suggest that we make the prince promote General Agon to Lord General. Agon would keep the prince from consolidating his power. And if Calidor makes any move...
While we acknowledge your complaint against Calidor, Master Blint, we aren't to squander our political capital on some general.
We don't have to.
Mama Kay, Mistress of Pleasures, was still beautiful, though it had been years since she was the city's most celebrated courtesan.
We can get what we want by pretending someone else asked for it. The prince was willing to buy off the general with a political marriage. So we tell him that Agon's price is a political appointment instead. The general won't ever know, and the prince isn't likely to ask about it.
And that gives us leverage to reopen the slavery issue.
I'll be damned if we turn slavers again.
The speaker was a big man gone too fat, with heavy jowls, small eyes, and scarred fists befitting the master of the Sakage's bashers.
That conversation can wait. Blint doesn't need to be here for that. You didn't kill tonight, Blint.
Terzo looked at Fischl, refusing to take the provocation.
Can you still do it?
Words were useless with a man like Corbin Fischl. He spoke the language of meat. Terzo walked to him. Corbin didn't flinch, didn't turn aside as Terzo came toward the platform, though several of the nine were clearly nervous. Under Fischl's velvet trousers, Blint could see his muscles bunch. Corbin kicked at Durzo's face, but Durzo had already moved. He slammed the needle deep into Corbin's calf and stepped back. Bernard and Lefty burst into the room. Lefty charged like a warhorse. Durzo merely extended both hands, unclenched, but when Lefty crashed into him, the impossible happened. Instead of crushing the smaller man, Lefty's sprint ended instantly. His face stopped first. The rest of him continued forward, and his body lifted parallel to the ground. Bernard skidded to a halt in front of Durzo, and then knelt by his brother.
Stop! Stop!
Lefty's bleeding nose was filling the mouth of a rat carved into the rock floor. Corbin pulled the needle out of his calf.
What is this, Blint?
You want to know if I can still kill?
Durzo put a small vial in front of the basher.
If that needle was poisoned, this is the antidote. But if the needle wasn't poisoned, the antidote will kill you. Drink it or don't.
Drink it, Corbin.
This was the first time the Shingar had spoken since Blint entered.
You know, Blint, you'd be a better wet boy if you didn't know you were the best. You are, but you still take your orders from me. The next time you touch one of my nine, there will be consequences. Now get the hell out.
The tunnel felt wrong. Azoth had been in other tunnels before, and if he wasn't exactly comfortable with moving through the cloying dark by touch, he could still do it. This tunnel had started out like any other. Rough cut, winding, and of course dark. But as it plunged deeper into the earth, the walls got straighter, the floor smoother. This tunnel was important. But that was different, not wrong. What was wrong was one step in front of Azoth. He squatted on his heels, resting, thinking. He didn't sit. You only sat when you knew there was nothing you'd have to run away from. He couldn't smell anything different, though the air was as heavy and thick as gruel down here. If he squinted, he thought he could see something, but he was pretty sure that was just from squeezing his eyes. He extended his hand again.
Was the air cooler, just there?
Then, he was sure he felt the air shift. Sudden fear arced through Azoth. Blint had passed through here 20 minutes ago. He hadn't carried a torch. Azoth hadn't thought about it then. Now he remembered the stories. A little puff of sour air lapped his cheek. Azoth almost ran, but he didn't know which way was safe to run. He had no way to defend himself. The fist kept all the weapons. Another puff touched his cheek. It smells like garlic.
There are secrets in this world, kid. Secrets like magical alarms and the identities of the Nine. If you take another step, you'll find one of those secrets. Then two nice bashers with orders to kill intruders will find you.
Master Blint?
Next time you follow a man, don't be so furtive. It makes you conspicuous.
Whatever that meant, it didn't sound good.
Master Blint!
Azoth jumped to his feet, feeling his hope slip away with a fading laughter. He ran up the tunnel in the dark.
Wait!
Azoth ran faster. A stone grabbed his foot.
Master Blint, wait! I need to apprentice with you, Master Blint, please!
I don't take apprentices. Go home, kid.
But I'm different. I'll do anything. I've got money.
But there was no response. Blint was gone.
Oh.
The silence ached, throbbed in time with the cuts on Azoth's knees and palms. But there was no help for it. He wanted to cry, but crying was for babies. Azoth walked back to Black Dragon territory as the sky lightened. Parts of the Warrens were shaking off their drunken slumber. Bakers were up, and smiths' apprentices were starting forge fires, but the guild rats, the whores, the bashers, and the sneak thieves had gone to sleep, and the cutpurses, cons, sharps, and the rest of those who worked the daylight were still asleep. Usually, the smells of the Warrens were comfortable. There was the permeating smell of the cattle yards over the more immediate smells of human waste, glooping through wide gutters in every street to further foul the Plith River, the rotting vegetation from the shallows and backwaters of the slow river, the less sour smell of the ocean when a lucky breeze blew, the stench of the sleeping, never-washed beggars who might attack a guild rat for no reason other than their rage at the world. For the first time, to Azoth, rather than home, the smells denoted filth. Rejection and despair were the vapors rising from every moldering ruin and shit pile in the Warrens. The abandoned mill here, once used for hulling rice, wasn't just an empty building the guild could sleep in. It was a sign. Mills on the west shore would be looted by those so desperate they'd break past whatever bashers the mill owners hired. It was all garbage and rejection, and Azoth was part of it. When he got to the guild home, Azoth nodded to the lookout and slipped inside with no attempt at stealth. The guild was used to children getting up to piss in the night, so no one would think he'd been out. If he tried to sneak in, he'd just draw attention to himself. Maybe that was what furtive meant.
Ugh.
Lying down in his usual spot next to the window, he slipped between Dahlgirl and Jarl. It got cold here, but the floor was flat, and there weren't many splinters. He nudged his friend.
Jarl, you know what furtive means.
Azoth poked him again, but Jarl wouldn't move.
Long night, I guess.
Like all the guild rats, Azoth, Jarl, and Dahlgirl slept close to each other for warmth. Usually, Dahlgirl got the middle because she was small and got cold so easy. But tonight, Jarl and Dahlgirl weren't lying close to each other. Dahlgirl scooted close and wrapped her arms around him, squeezing tightly. And Azoth was glad for her warmth. A worry gnawed at the back of his mind like a rat, but he was too tired. He slept. The nightmare started when Azoth woke.
Good morning! How's my favorite little guttershite?
The glee on Rat's face told Azoth that something was seriously wrong. Roth and Harelip stood on either side of Rat, almost bursting with excitement. Dahlgirl was gone. Jarl was gone. Jalaliel was nowhere to be seen. Blinking against the sunlight streaming through the guild home's torn roof, Azoth stood and tried to orient himself. The rest of the guild was gone, either working, scavenging, or just deciding that now would be a good time to be outside. So, they'd seen Rat come in. Roth stood by the back door and Harelip stood behind Rat in case Azoth ran for the front door or a window.
Where were you last night?
I had to piss.
Long piss. You missed the fun.
Azoth knew violence. He'd seen sailors murdered, had seen prostitutes with fresh scars, had a friend die from a vendor's beating. Cruelty walked the Warrens holding hands with poverty and rage, but the dead look in Rat's eyes marked him as more of a freak than Harelip. Harelip had been born without part of his lip. Rat had been born without a conscience.
What did you do,
Roth?
Good boy.
Roth grabbed something. He hauled it inside, and Azoth saw that it was Jarl. Jarl's lips were swollen, both eyes black and so big he could barely see through the slits. He was missing teeth, and he had crusted blood on his face from where his hair had been pulled so hard his scalp bled. He was wearing a dress. Azoth felt hot and cold tingles on his skin, a rush of blood to his face. He couldn't show Rat weakness. He couldn't move. He turned so he wouldn't throw up.
Azoth, please. Azoth, don't turn away from me. I I didn't want...
Jarl's mine now. He thinks he'll fight every night, and he will. For a while. But I'll break him. Time's on my side.
I'll kill you. I swear it.
Oh, are you Master Blint's apprentice now?
Brett smiled as Azoth shot Jarl a look, feeling betrayed. Jarl turned his face to the floor, his shoulders shaking as he cried.
Jarl told us all about it. Sometime between Roth and Davy, I think. But I'm confused. If Master Blint apprenticed you, why are you here, Azoth? You come back to kill me?
Jarl's tears stilled, and he turned, grasping at straws. There was nothing to say.
He wouldn't take me.
Everyone knows he don't take apprentices, stupid. So here's the deal, Azo. I'll know what you've done for him, but Jalaliel's ordered me not to touch you, and I won't. But sooner or later, this'll be my guilt.
Sooner, I think.
Roth wiggled his eyebrows at Azoth.
I have big plans for Black Dragon, Azo. And I won't let you get in my way.
What do you want from me?
I want you to be a hero. I want everyone who doesn't dare stand up to me themselves to look at you and start to hope. And then I will destroy everything you've done. I will destroy everything you love. I will destroy you so completely that no one will ever defy me again. So do your best. Do your worst. Do nothing at all. I win no matter what. I always do.
Azoth didn't pay dues the next day. He hoped Rat would hit him, just once, and he'd be off the pedestal. He'd just be another guild rat. But Rat didn't hit him. He'd raged and swore, his eyes smiling, and told Azoth to bring double next time. Of course, he brought nothing. He merely extended an empty hand as if already beaten. It didn't matter. Rat raged, accused him of defying him, and didn't lay a hand on him. And so it was, every dues day. Gradually, Azoth went back to work and started accumulating coppers to put in Jarl's pack. These days were awful. Rat didn't let Jarl speak to Azoth, and after a while, Azoth didn't think Jarl even wanted to speak to him. The Jarl he knew disappeared by slow degrees. It didn't even help when they stopped making him wear the dress. The nights were worse. Rat took Jarl every night while the rest of the guild pretended not to hear. Azoth and Doll Girl huddled together, and in the quiet punctuated by low weeping afterward, Azoth lay on his back for long hours, plotting elaborate revenge that he knew he'd never carry out. He became reckless, cursing Rat to his face, questioning every order the boy gave, and championing anyone Rat beat. Rat swore back, but always with that little smile in his eyes. The littles and the losers in the guild started deferring to Azoth and looking at him with worshipful eyes. Azoth could feel the guild reaching a critical mass the day two bigs brought him lunch and sat with him on the porch. It was a revelation. He'd never believed that any of the bigs would follow him. Why would they? He was nothing. And then he saw his mistake. He'd never made plans for what to do when Biggs joined him. Across the yard, Jalaliel sat, miserable, looking hopeless.
I'm so stupid.
Rat had been waiting for this. He'd arranged for Azoth to be a hero. He'd even told him. This wasn't going to be a coup. It was going to be a purge.
Father, please, don't go.
Logan Geyer held his father's destrier, ignoring the pre-dawn chill and holding back tears.
No, leave it.
Duke Geyer spoke to Wendell North, his steward, who was directing servants with chests full of the Duke's clothing.
But I want 1,000 war cloaks sent within a week. Use our funds and don't ask for repayment. I don't want to give the king an excuse to say no. I don't know what shape the garrison stables are in, but I'd like to have word from Havamir of how many horses they can send before winter.
It's already done, my lord.
On every side, servants were coming and going, loading the wagons that would travel north with provisions and supplies. 100 Geyer knights made their own last-minute preparations, checking their saddles, horses, and weapons. Servants who would be leaving their families said hurried goodbyes. Duke Geyer turned to Logan, and just seeing his father in his mail brought tears of pride and fear to Logan's eyes.
Son, you're 12 years old.
I can fight! Even Master Vorden admits that I handle a sword almost as well as a soldier's.
Logan, it isn't because I don't believe in your abilities that I'm making you stay. It's because I do. The fact is, your mother needs you here more than I need you in the mountains.
But I want to go with you.
And I don't want to leave at all. It doesn't have anything to do with what we want.
Jason said Nina is trying to embarrass you. He said it's an insult for a duke to be given such a small command.
Logan didn't mention the other things Jason had said. Logan didn't consider himself quick-tempered, but in the 3 months since King Davin had died, and Elaine Gunder had assumed the title Elaine the Ninth, known condescendingly as Niner, Logan had been in half a dozen fights.
And what do you think, son?
I don't think you're afraid of anyone.
So Jason said I was afraid, did he? Is that where you got the bruises on your knuckles?
Logan grinned suddenly. He was as tall as his father, and if he didn't have Regnus Geyer's bulk yet, the guards master, Ren Vorden, said it was only a matter of time. When Logan fought other boys, he didn't lose.
Son, make no mistake. Commanding the garrison at Screaming Winds is a slight, but it's better than exile or death. If I stay, the king will give me one or the other eventually. Each summer you'll come train with my men, but I need you here too. For half the year, you'll be my eyes and ears in Sonaria. Your mother...
thinks your father is a fool.
Katrina Geyer came up behind them suddenly. She had been born to another ducal family, the Graysons, and she had their green eyes, petite features, and temper. Despite the early hour, she was dressed in a beautiful green silk dress edged with ermine, her hair brushed glossy.
Regnus, if you get on that horse, I never want to see you come back.
Katrina, we aren't having this discussion again.
That jackal will hurl you against my family. You know that. Destroy you, destroy them. He wins no matter what.
This is your family, Katrina, and I've made my decision.
Which of your harlots are you taking with you?
I'm not taking any of the maidservants, Katrina, though some of them will be hard to replace. I'm leaving them here out of respect for
your... How stupid do you think I am? You'll just find sluts there.
Katrina, go inside. Now.
Katrina obeyed, and Duke Geyer watched her go.
Your mother... there are things I'll share with you when you're older. For now, I expect you to honor her. But you will be Lord Geyer while I'm gone.
Logan's eyes went wide. His father clapped him on the shoulder.
That doesn't mean you get to skip your lessons. Wendell will teach you everything you need to know. I swear the man understands more about running our lands than I do. I'm only a 4-day ride away. You have a fine mind, son, and that's why you have to stay. This city is a viper's nest. There are those who would destroy us. Your mother has seen hints of that, and it's been part of her troubles. I'm gambling with you, Logan. I wish I didn't have to, but you're the only piece I have left to play. Surprise them. Be smarter, better, braver, and faster than anyone expects. It's not a fair burden for me to put on you, but I must. I'm counting on you. House Geyer is counting on you. All our retainers and vassals are counting on you, and maybe even the kingdom itself.
Duke Geyer swung up onto his huge white destrier.
I love you, son, but don't let me down.
The darkness was as close and cold as the dead's embrace. Azoth squatted against the alley wall, hoping the night wind covered the sound of thunder in his heart. The fifth big, who'd joined him, had stolen a shiv from Rat's weapons cache, and Azoth clutched the thin metal so tightly his hand hurt. There was still no motion in the alley. Azoth stuck the blade in the dirt of the alley and put his hands in his armpits to keep them warm. Nothing might happen for hours. It didn't matter. He was running out of chances. He'd wasted too much time as it was. Rat wasn't stupid. He was cruel, but he had plans. Azoth didn't. He'd been flailing in his fear for 3 months, flailing when he could have been planning. The Fist had declared his intentions. That made it easy enough. Azoth knew some of what he was planning. All he had to do was piece together how. Now, as he thought, he could feel himself slipping into rat skin all too easily, thinking rat's thoughts.
A purge isn't good enough. A purge will give me safety for a couple of years. Other guild heads have killed to keep their power. Killing doesn't make me different.
Azoth worked on the idea. Rat didn't have small ambitions. Rat had bottled up his hatred for 3 months. Why would he be willing to not even hit Azoth for 3 months?
Destruction.
That's what it came down to. Rat would destroy him in spectacular fashion. He would sate his own cruelty and advance his power. He would do something so awful that Azoth would become a story the guilds would tell. He might not even kill him. Just leave him maimed in some horrific way so that everyone who met Azoth would fear Rat more. Azoth tensed. Slowly, so slowly, he pulled out the shiv. The alley was tight. The building sagging so close a grown man could touch both walls at the same time. Azoth had chosen it for that reason. He wouldn't let his quarry slip past him. But now the walls seemed malevolent, stretching hungry fingers toward each other, closing out the stars, grabbing for him. Wind muttered over the roofs, telling tales of murder. Azoth relaxed as a scared old rat emerged from under a pile of moldering boards and sniffed. Azoth held still as the rat wobbled forward. It sniffed at Azoth's bare feet, nudged them with a wet nose, and, sensing no danger, moved forward to feed. Just as the rat moved to bite, Azoth buried the shiv behind its ear and into the ground beneath. Azoth withdrew the thin iron, satisfied with his stealth. He checked the alley again. Still nothing.
So where am I weak? What would I do to destroy me if I were rat?
Something tickled his neck and he brushed it away.
Cursed bugs. Bugs? It's freezing out here.
Azoth's hand came down from his neck, warm and sticky. Azoth turned and lashed out, but the shiv went spinning from his hand as something struck his wrist. Jerzo Blint squatted on his heels, not a foot away. He didn't speak. He just stared, his eyes colder than the night.
You sold a rat.
An eyebrow lifted.
You cut me where I cut it. You were showing me that you're as much better than me as I am better than the rat.
A hint of a smile.
A strange little guild rat you are. So smart. So stupid.
Azoth looked at the shiv, now magically in Durzo's hand, and felt ashamed. He was stupid. What had he been thinking? He was going to threaten a wet boy?
I'm going to apprentice with you.
Give me one good reason why I shouldn't kill you.
Doll girl.
She wasn't only the answer to Blint's question, she was Azoth's weakness. She was where Rat would strike. A wave of nausea swept over Azoth. First Jarl, and now Doll Girl.
You should.
Blint raised an eyebrow again.
You're the best wet boy in the city, but you're not the only one. And if you want to apprentice me and you don't kill me, I'll train under Hugh Gibbet or Scald Rabel. I'll spare my life training just for the moment I have my chance at you. I'll wait until you think I've forgotten today. I'll wait until you think I was just a dumb guild rat's threat. After I'm a master, you'll jump at shadows for a while, but after you jump a dozen times and I'm not there, you won't jump just once, and that's when I'll be there. I don't care if you kill me at the same time. I'll trade my life for yours.
Durzo's eyes barely had to shift to go from dangerously amused to simply dangerous. But Azoth didn't even see them through the tears brimming in his own eyes. He only saw the vacant look that had come into Jarl's eyes and imagined seeing it in Doll Girl's. He imagined her screams if Rat came and took her every night. She'd scream wordlessly for the first few weeks, maybe fight, bite and scratch for a while, and then she wouldn't scream anymore, wouldn't fight at all. There would just be grunting and the sounds of flesh and Rat's pleasure, just like Jarl.
Is your life so empty, boy?
It will be if you say no. I want to be like you.
No one wants to be like me.
Blint drew a huge black sword and touched the edge to Azoth's throat. In that moment, Azoth didn't care if the blade drank his life's blood. Death would be kinder than watching Doll Girl disappear before his eye.
You like hurting people?
No, sir.
Ever killed anyone?
No.
Then why are you wasting my time?
I heard you don't like it. That you don't have to like it to be good.
Who told you that?
Mama Kay. She said that's the difference between you and some of the others.
Blint frowned. He pulled a clove of garlic from a pouch and popped it into his mouth. He slid the sword into its sheath.
All right, kid. You want to get rich?
Azoth nodded.
You're quick. But can you tell what your marks are thinking and remember 50 things at once? Do you have good hands?
Nod, nod, and nod.
Be a gambler.
Azoth simply looked at his feet.
I don't want to be afraid anymore.
Jalaliel beats you?
Jalaliel's nothing.
Then who is?
Our fist. Rat. Why was it so hard to say his name?
He beats you.
Unless you'll do things with him.
Blint didn't say anything.
I won't let anyone beat me again. Not ever.
Blint kept looking past Azoth, giving him time to blink away his tears. The full moon bathed the city in golden light.
The old whore can be beautiful, despite everything.
Azoth followed Blint's gaze, but there was no one else in sight. Silver mist rose from the warm manure of the cattle yards and coiled around old broken aqueducts. In the darkness, Azoth couldn't see the bleeding man freshly scrawled over his own guild's black dragon, but he knew it was there. His guild had been losing territory steadily since Jalaliel got sick.
Sir?
This city's got no culture but street culture. The buildings are brick on one street, daub and wattle the next. Bamboo one over. Titles Alaterin, clothes Collian, music all Sethi harps and Lodrakari lyres. The damn rice paddies themselves stolen from Kira. But as long as you don't touch her or look too close, sometimes she's beautiful.
Azoth thought he understood. You had to be careful what you touched and where you walked in the Warrens. Pools of vomit and other bodily fluids were splattered in the streets, and the dung-fueled fires and fatty stream from the constantly boiling tallow vats covered everything with a greasy, sooty sheen. But he had no reply. He wasn't even sure Blint was talking to him.
You're close, boy. But I never take apprentices, and I won't take you.
Blint paused and idly spun the shiv from finger to finger.
Not unless you do something you can't.
I'll do anything.
You'd have to do it alone. No one else could know. You'd have to figure out how, when, and where, all by yourself.
What do I have to do?
Azoth could feel the night angels curling their fingers around his stomach. How did he know what Blint was going to say next? Blint picked up the dead rat and threw it to Azoth.
Just this. Kill your rat and bring me proof. You've got a week.